Thank you for the introduction. It's a great pleasure to virtually visit PI. And thank you for the invitation. I'm very happy to do it. So today I will be talking about non-relativistic physics and ideas and its CFD duals based on a work with Henry Maxwell, which hopefully will appear soon. So the broad motivation of this work is to better understand the correspondence between ideas, space-time, and CFD, which it's a study has started more than 20 years ago with the work of Mollesina and Witten. So for the purpose of this talk, what I will mean by ideas CFD is the duality between the theory of quantum gravity in the plus one dimensional asymptotic ADS and the d-dimensional local CFD. So I try to depict the duality in the picture as well, which you can see ADS in global coordinate and a CFD in radial quantization. And you can see that the time evolution in ADS is corresponded with the radial motion or scaling in CFD. So even though this correspondence has been studied for 20 years, there is still much more physical insights and intuition left to be understood. So in this direction, I'm going to study the duality in the non-relativistic limit in the hope of shedding some light on some aspects of it. In particular, some question we focus on will be as follows. So the first one is whether we can understand the scaling dimension and OPE spectrum of CFD, which I will call bi-rigid trajectories in the non-relativistic limit. And some physical property, which would also be nice to understand, would be some physical question that would be nice to understand is that can we understand like physical properties of the two-body orbits, such as like precession in ADS from this spectrum from the radial trajectories. Another question, which I will spend some time on, is that can we understand the non-relativistic flat space physics from the CFD correlator? This is expected when we take the ADS radius to infinity, we expect to recover the flat space scattering. So does this expectation actually happen? So the full relativistic version of this question have been of interest in many years and have been answered in many limits. So we hope that studying them in the non-relativistic limit can also give some further information on the full scope of the question. So before going to answering to these questions, let's cover some background. So the metric of the global ADS is given as follows, where L is the radius of the ADS. We can also think of global ADS as a cylinder, which would be helpful. And we can see that by identifying the radius in this matrix with the parameter rho in the following, in this sense. So pictorially, we get ADS as a cylinder with finite radius. And with the time coordinate going upward. So, since we are interested in the non-relativistic dynamics, we are interested in the geodesic, which have their spatial velocity much less than their temporal velocity. So, if tau is the parameter, the proper time of the geodesic, we expect this relation between the spatial part and the temporal part. In this regime, it of course means that we can identify the time component of the metric with the gravitational potential, which is given as follows. If you identify omega with c over l versus the speed of light, and l is the radius of l ads, you can see that this follows from the metrics written in the previous page. This then would be our potential, gravitational potential in the non-relativistic limit. And we can see that the, this potential confines the non-relativistic particle to radius much smaller than the radius, the curvature radius of ADS. So in this talk, we won't be able to probe the spatial curvature of ADS. We would the effect of curvature will be just seen from this parameter omega here. And with this gravitational potential, we can now write the Hamiltonian of the non-relativistic particles in ADS. Here I have written it for the two particle, because I will focus on the dynamics of the two particles. Here, Vr would be the potential, the interaction, interacting potential between the two particles. So this is going to be the non-relativistic Hamiltonian that I will study in the rest of the talk. So with the background covered, I'm going to talk about the outline of the talk. So first I will study, I will start by studying the symmetry of the problem. The goal of this would be to maybe, understanding the symmetry well enough, so we can find the state that trivializes the symmetry to simplify our job in the next sections. Then we will focus on extracting the data about extracting the data on the radio trajectories or data of the two particles, two particle states in the ADS. We first get this data from quantum theory from quantum theory in the bulk. Of course, we're gonna get this perturbatively. Then we're going to do a direct CFD calculation to extract the data from the CFD, and we will see that these data will match perfectly in the appropriate regime. And then we will try to understand the precession of the near circle orbit in ADS from the rigid trajectories of the CFD. In the third part of the talk, I'll answer the second question, which would be to find the scattering amplitude from the CFD correlation function. So first I'll tell you what the CFD correlation function is in the non-relativistic limit, and then how to prepare the states through Euclidean time evolution, prepare the scattering states, and then I will show that show that the flat space amplitude is equivalent to the CFD correlation function. Would be more at it saying it than showing it for the purpose of the talk. And then we'll have summary and outlook. So let's talk about the symmetry of the problem. So we start, as I said, by studying the symmetry in order to find out which state would trivialize them so that we could choose them and work with them for the matter of simplification. So the symmetry algebra of ADS is SOD comma 2, which is then spanned by the dilatation operator, the momentum operators, a special conformal transformation, and the rotation operator, which would satisfy the following commutation relations, along with the fact that the KI and PI are vector under the SOD rotation. Now we'll take the non-relativistic limit of this algebra. So to take the non-relativistic limit, we note that the dilatation operator is actually the time translation in global coordinate. So we can identify it with the Hamiltonian, and in the non-relativistic limit, we know the Hamiltonian will be dominated by the rest mass plus the non-relativistic Hamiltonian part, but the rest mass would be the dominant part. So the conformal algebra will then simplify as follows. If we look at this algebra a little bit more, we can see that this algebra is actually the algebra of harmonic oscillator up to a rescaling. Oh, wait. Yeah. Okay. First, note that the action of PI is PI is the momentum operator in global coordinate. It acts linearly in the position and the momentum. So it means that it acts on the center of mass wave function. This is going to be a fact which we will use later, but yeah, it follows from the fact that it acts linearly. So as I said before mentioning this fact, by looking at the algebra, we can actually see that this is similar to the algebra of harmonic oscillator, and indeed up to a normalization it is. So we have indeed recovered the algebra of the harmonic oscillator with PI as a creation operator acting on the center of mass wave function. So from this, we can then write the Hamiltonian as a part, which is the harmonic oscillator, which would act only on the center of mass plus the H relative. So this means that the Hilbert space will factorize us, and we can separate the center of mass and the relative part in our analysis. So if we focus on the states which are killed by the PI or the creation operator, which would be the ground state of the harmonic oscillator algebra, we see that these states, of course, because they're killed by the translation operator, they're the primary states of the CFD. And these would be the ground states of the center of mass wave function. And yeah, they would also trivialize as the symmetry because they would correspond to the ground state of the harmonic oscillator. So using the symmetry, we can work with the primary operators, and the energy shift of the primary two particle states then would only come from the relative Hamiltonian. So from now on, it would only suffice us to study the relative Hamiltonian in order to understand the energy spectrum of the states. This is just the result of the symmetry analysis. Any questions so far? Okay. So if no question, I will use the states that I mentioned. Okay. So if just the takeaway from this section would be that from now on, we will focus on the primary two part. We have shown with the symmetry analysis that it's enough to focus on the primary two particle states and work with the relative Hamiltonian to understand their energy shift and the spectrum. So let's now focus on how to extract data about these data on these two particle states. So to extract the energy shift, as I mentioned earlier, we will focus on the relative Hamiltonian. The non-relativistic potential for the two-body problem is then given as follows, where mu is now the reduced mass. Now we can just use the effective quantum theory to obtain energy shift due to to a potential VR when the potential is much smaller than the other terms in the Hamiltonian. So sometimes I kept omega and sometimes I dropped it. Apologize if it's confusing. So the energy shift, according to just time-independent perturbation theory, is given as follows, where NL are the solution of the unperturbed Hamiltonian. Since the dilatation operator is the Hamiltonian in ADS, then this energy shift of the two particle states in ADS would also give us the anomalous dimension of the double twist operators dual to those two particle states in the CFD, in the relevant regime where the scaling dimension of the of the particles are large. This is needed for the non-relativistic. This is basically the meaning of the non-relativistic limit. So now we can solve this unperturbed Hamiltonian for when the potential is zero to obtain the unperturbed solution to be this confluent hypergeometric function. We can also get this solution by taking the non-relativistic limit of the solution to the ADS fully relativistic Laplacian. So everything is consistent. You can work with the full relativistic Schrodinger equation and take the non-relativistic limit at the end if interested. So to proceed with the calculation and be and to be able to actually use the perturbation, the quantum perturbation theory, we need a small parameter that we can expand in. Now, for this talk, we will focus on the potential, which are 1/r potential. It could be either a Kepler potential or a Coulomb potential. For the purpose of this calculation, of course, it doesn't matter as long as you have a small parameter that you can expand in and your potential is linear in that small parameter. Once the potential is linear in the small parameter, we can organize the energy shift and the anomalous dimension in power of the small parameter to get the energy shift order by order. Where here the states are the unperturbed states, which we got in the previous. Slide. So we have all the ingredient we need, so we can do the calculation. The integration ranges over the ADS. The d vol is the volume element of ADS. And by performing the integral, we can obtain the anomalous dimension or the energy shift to the first order for any N and L, where N and L were labeling the states. So this is a complicated 3F2. It would be, we can't read much information from it directly. So it would be illuminating to look at different limits of this formula. So first, let's look at the flat space limit, which would correspond to large N and large L, where N is parametrically larger than L. In that regime, we correctly reproduce the IR log in the impact parameter space as expected. We can also do just the large L limit, which we have analytical result from the large L bootstrap. And we can see that in the large L limit, we also get the expected scaling. But the advantage of this formula is, of course, it works for any N and any L, as opposed to the existing formula. So As promised, this analysis can describe part of the Reggie trajectories for us, especially, of course, it's because we treated the potential to be small. This was like the conservation theory. We would get information at very large L. We would also get information at intermediate L when the potential can be considered as small. However, we cannot really use it for a really small L, because in really small L, then one of our potential would dominate. There are other things that we can do at R close to zero or small L, which would be then treating the harmonic potential as a perturbation. And then using that, we can get the anomalous dimension in the regime where I showed by the blue ellipse. So at positive energy, we can get positive energy, small L, and large N, which would be like, which would correspond to flat space scattering. We can get the Rutherford scattering. At again large L, but potential non-negligible, we can get a system like solar system or classical Kepler orbits. This again we can get by treating the harmonic oscillator now as a perturbation and taking and find and solving for the 1/r potential exactly. And then at small L, where the problem become quantum mechanical, we can also get like quantum mechanical orbits. But there are some intermediate parts in this graph where both harmonic potential and 1/r potential are not negligible. In those parts, we only are able to get the data numerically, and it would be nice to get all of the data on this Reggie trajectory and these sets of Reggie trajectories analytically. But yeah, for the parts shown in the blue ellipses, we can get them analytically. So that's the study of the Reggie trajectories of a system dual to a non-relativistic two-body problem in ADS with a 1/r potential. Now, the perturbation that we discussed, the quantum perturbation that we discussed, is a nice interpretation in terms of the number of graviton exchange in the cross channel. And in ADS-CFD correspondence, this then maps to the exchange of a stress sensor and its multi-twist operator in the CFD. This is nice because we can then use Lorentzian inversion formula to extract the scaling dimension and the OPU coefficient of the operator in the CFD. This analysis will be fully relativistic, and we're going to take the non-relativistic limit at the end. This can be done, this mapping can be done, because we had the small parameter in the problem, Gn, and the potential was linear in it, which is a key point here. So let's see how we can extract the information, the anomalous dimension directly from the CFD. So the information about the two-body dynamics discussed above can be extracted from the CFD correlator, which I will quickly review here. The CFD correlator is a function of two cross ratios up to an overall coefficient. And the two cross ratios are related to the distance of the operators. These phis are the dual to the operators that we had in the bulk. That we considered their non-relativistic dynamics. And to focus on the non-relativistic dynamics, these phis need to have a large scaling dimension, which would be, which would make them dual to non-relativistic particle in the bulk. Now we can use a Lorentzian inversion formula to get information on the double twist spectrum order by order in GN. This is simple at order GN because only the stress tensor contributes, but it's only simple for the first few trajectories, so it's not going to be easy to derive all n, but let's see why. So Lorentzian inversion formula generates the CFD data from the double discontinuity of the correlator, where the double discontinuity of the correlator is just the Euclidean correlator with a Z and Z bar, Z bar being the complex conjugate of Z, minus the analytically continued correlator subtracted. The analytic continuation, we get it what we mean by analytic continuation is analytic continuation around the branch point of the correlator at Z bar equal one. So that's what we mean by the double discontinuity. The advantage of the double discontinuity is that double discontinuity, it's easier to calculate than the correlator. So that's the advantage of the Lorentzian inversion formula. Now, with the double discontinuity as the dynamical information, we can do a purely kinematical evaluation on it, which would be the inversion formula, to read the OPE data, the anomalous dimension, the scaling dimension, and OPE of the operators in the CFD. So the inversion formula has three ingredients, the dynamical one being the double discontinuity, the inverse block, which is just a block with a dimension and spin exchange, and some kinematical factor in Z and Z bar. The double discontinuity of the correlator, we can calculate it by doing an OP expansion, since the double discontinuity was taken around Z bar equal one. It would be nicer to get the to do the OP expansion in T channel, and then we can read the double discontinuity of the correlator in terms of the double discontinuity of the blocks appearing in the expansion of the correlator. The double discontinuity of the cross-channel blocks are known. They're just like some sine squared times the block themselves. And that advantage of the double discontinuity is that this sine squared vanish for the double twist operator. So it manages to kill contribution of many operators to the inversion formula. So it's in general a simpler object than the correlator itself. Now this double, so this calculates for us the T-channel part of the inversion formula, and then we need to add a U-channel part as well, and then this gives us the inversion formula from which we can read off the CFD data. And the way that it encodes the CFD data is through the OPE coefficient, it's through the through its coefficient and its power. So the power gives us the twist or the scaling dimension of the operator, and the coefficient gives us the OPE coefficient squared. Here, the M starts, the sum over M starts from zero to whatever order we want to keep, and the M labels the number of the number of Fourier trajectory. So to read the information of the leading trajectory, it would be enough to keep the first order in the sum. And to go higher, you need to keep higher order in the sum. That's why it becomes a bit cumbersome. Now, we can read these information, Cm and tau m, by just expanding the double discontinuity, the dynamical variable, and the inverse block in power of z. This has one advantage, which is that at order gn, only stress tensor contributes to the double discontinuity. As I said, double trace operators are killed in the sense that their double discontinuity would make them contribute at order higher. At order gn squared. In addition, of course, they're also suppressed by their OPE, but the double disc would suppress them more too. And then the disadvantage of this procedure is that the double expansion of the double discontinuity and the inverse block gets really complicated, except for the few leading trajectory and a large n. So that's really hard to get an all n result from the inversion formula. You have to evaluate it term by term. You cannot really guess what the formula would be for a generic n. There's also one further obstruction, which is that the blocks do not have a closed form in odd dimension. We can overcome this obstruction by using Jodasek-Witten diagram to get an integral representation for the stress tensor exchange and use collinear expansion for the inverse block. Okay, so what is a Jodasek-Witten diagram? So Jodasek-Witten diagram is basically a Witten diagram, except that instead of integrating over the whole ADS spacetime, we only integrate over geodesic connecting O1 and O2 and O3 and O4. For us, because we are doing a T-channel expansion, that would be O3, O2, O3, O1, O4. But the idea is the same. This has the advantage that it reproduces the conformal block for dimension delta and spin L. If we did, instead of like the usual Witten diagram, which in addition to the conformal block has the contribution of all the double twist operators of O1, O2, and O3, O4. So this singles out the block contribution itself. Here, phi is basically just a bulk to bulk propagator, but pulled back on the two geodesics. We can also further simplify this integral by using the symmetry of the problem, using the symmetry in the global coordinate and focusing and fixing one operator to lie at the geodesic to lie at the origin, and then we would only need to do an integral over one variable, which would then give us a closed form for the stress tensor block in any dimension. This is really nice because otherwise there is no closed form expression for stress tensor block in odd dimensions. Now, having this integral representation, we can do the do the expansion in Z order by order and input to the Lorentzian inversion formula to obtain the anomalous dimension of the operators, of the double twist operators. We can, however, as I said, it's going to, it is difficult to do it for generic n, so we focus on n equals 0 and n equals 1. And we see that it perfectly matches with the 3F2 calculation that we did earlier. However, that 3F2 was more general because it worked for any n. We can also correctly identify the OPE coefficient of the stress tensor to operator O1, O2 to be given as follows. I've written the result for 3D, but this holds for it's not harder to, it's the same calculation for any dimension. I just wrote it to have numbers to look at. And so this is a direct check of the bulk calculation that we did earlier. And note that this calculation was like fully relativistic. We only took the large delta limit at the end. So there are some highlights that I want to mention. One is that you can repeat the calculation for the conserved current, which gives the same result up to a general normalization, which would absorb into the OPE coefficient of the vector current to the two operators. Indeed, exchanging any conserved operator give the same result in the large external dimension limit. This is expected because we saw in the bulk that they all correspond to the 1 over R potential. So we do indeed expect to get the same result in the non-relativistic limit for all the conserved current exchange. As I said, all of the calculation above can be done in a general D, but we focused on D equal 3 in this talk. We can also do the calculation with a scalar exchange with large scaling dimension of order the scaling dimension of the external operators. This would then correspond to the exchange of massive particles in the bulk and would correspond to the Yukawa potential in the bulk. And indeed check that for the Yukawa potential as well, we can get the energy shift and the scaling dimension from an easy quantum mechanic perturbation theory calculation. Okay. So we can go to the next order in the calculation. In the CFD, it becomes too tedious because now we need to sum over the double traces of the stress tensor. Of course, the double trace of the, they would all now contribute. But in the bulk, the calculation is again simpler because this infinite sum can be evaluated analytically, and we can, even though it cannot be done at once for generic n, but we can do it at n equals zero, at whatever n we ask for, and the anomalous dimension is now given as for F3 function of the spin for the, I've coded the result for the leading and subleading rigid trajectory, the anomalous dimension of operators on the leading and subleading rigid trajectories. This is again points out to something non-trivial, which is that it doesn't matter if we have exchange of T or conserve current or any other conserve operator in the CFD, they must all sum to the same result, because in the bulk we had 1 over R potential for all of them, and they would just differ by a normalization. This is not easy to see from the CFD point of view why they all give the same result, but they must from the bulk point of view. All of the sum over all these double traces should give, whether it's AA or TT, should give the same result. Okay. So now I want to talk about the precession of the near circular orbit in the box. Sorry, let me. Oh, sorry. So circular orbits are usually are the orbits with lowest energy. This means that by definition, this means that they contribute to the leading rigid trajectory, because the leading rigid trajectory is the lowest scaling dimension for any spin. So the period of these orbits are determined by the angular frequency. It's 1 over angular frequency, 2 pi over angular frequency. We are interested in looking at the precession of the near circular orbit. So we want to perturb away from exactly circular. We get perturbing away from exactly circular, we then get the radial motion given as follows, because V prime R is zero when we have circular orbit. And then the ratio of these two frequencies give us the near circular precession, near circular orbit precession. If the ratio is an integer, it means that the orbit does not precess, but if it's anything but an integer, it will precess. So for Kepler potential, we can see that the that this ratio is indeed an integer, so we don't have any precession. For the harmonic oscillator as well, but for them combined, it's of course going to be something non-integer, and we will have precession. So what we do is that we're going to use that the result of the anomalous dimension that we had to calculate the precession when the Kepler potential is a perturbation on the harmonic potential. So basically when the Kepler potential is much smaller. So for any given spin, we have a one-dimensional motion in the effective potential. Changing the energy would be corresponding to the radial frequency. For any given n, we can also again change the energy by changing the angular frequency. And this then relates the precession of the near circular orbit to the ratio of the gap between the first two trajectories and their slope, which in the regime of our perturbation theory, we can calculate it to be 2 plus something of order gn, plus something of order gn squared, which we can also calculate with the next order result that we had. So the result of our anomalous, so the result that we got on the Reggie trajectory can actually calculate for us something physical, which is the precession of the near circular orbit. Okay, was there any question on the things discussed in the previous section? Please feel free to interrupt me anytime. Yeah, how much time do I have?
You have 15 minutes.
Okay. Okay, so now I will quickly go over of how to find the scattering amplitude from the CFD correlation function. So the CFD correlation function we consider is the non-relativistic in the non-relativistic correlation function, which is the four-point correlator, which consists of the four-point operators with a dimension much bigger than one, and with z small such that z delta I and z bar, with z and z bar small, so z delta I and z bar delta I are kept fixed. Okay, so we want to see how we can prepare our state such that our correlation function can give us the scattering amplitude in the flat space regime. So we have seen that the primary states O are the ground states of the harmonic operator. This would be operator because the time evolution is the is a scaling dimension, is the scaling operator in the CFD. This would be the operator inserted at distant past or at the origin in the CFD plane. And now we can get operator at any other point in the CFD plane by applying the translation operator to the ground state, which then means that we're going to get we're going to create a single state operator at any other point in the Euclidean time. We see that this gives a coherent state, a Gaussian wave function. It would be a Gaussian wave function with the same width as the ground state, but now the center is offset from the origin because we applied the translation. We can do, so this was, this is how we can prepare a single particle state. We can prepare a two particle state in the same way. We can just consider the tensor product of the two coherent state defined above to create a two particle state. Now we can then split this into the center of mass and separation variable. Splitting to the center of mass variable, we can then apply the special conformal transformation to put the operator in the primary state of the center of mass wave function. And then, yeah, that would be done by choosing R Y1 and Y2 in the similar way. So the product state would then be annihilated by the special conformal transformation, and the state we get would be a primary state. So this motivates us to consider the Euclidean scattering state defined as below. So zero in the center of mass, and up a negotiation in the separation in the in the separation variable. So here a dagger is different from the capital A dagger that we had before, and is the creation operator built from the separation variable. So now we can build the flat space scattering amplitude by inserting the operator, by inserting the operator that we prepared through Euclidean time evolution, and just inserting a real time evolution in between. This is depicted in the picture below, where we can, where the Euclidean time evolution are depicted through the hemisphere, and the Euclidean and the Lorentzian time evolution is done in the cylinder part of the bulk. Okay, so this is how we can actually get a flat space scattering amplitude from a CFD correlation function through this Euclidean time evolution to prepare the states to be in the Gaussian wave function and doing the Lorentzian time evolution. Okay, so now the summary and the outlook. So in this talk, we analyzed the non-relativistic two-body problem in ADS. Specifically, in this limit, we have exploited perturbation theory in order to extract data about the CFD spectrum. We found that we can get the leading and sub-leading anomalous dimension of the double twist operator using just perturbation theory in the bulk. We then use CFD tools to obtain the anomalous dimension for n equals 0 and n equals 1 and find perfect agreement after taking the large delta limit, which would correspond to the non-relativistic dynamics in the bulk. And then we use the obtained CFD data to get the precession of the ADS orbit of the near circular ADS orbit in the regime that our perturbation is valid. We have also answered the second question in the non-relativistic part by introducing a physical way to extract the flat space bulk S matrix from the ADS CFD correspondence. This has a few advantages compared to the construction available in the literature. First, since we used Euclidean time evolution to prepare the states, we did not need to smear in and out states over real time. Also, we did not have to treat VFR as a small correction by splitting the Hamiltonian into mass, center of mass, and a relative part, and our VFR could have been strongly coupled. As a future direction, I want to mention that in non-relativistic dynamics turns out to be an easy toy model in which we can prepare the states, do the partial wave decomposition, and much more. It is thus the perfect playground to study strongly coupled bulk physics from CFD. It would be interesting to also go to higher order in perturbation theory. This is interesting from the CFD perspective, as it gives the contribution of the resummation of all multi-twist operator at a specific order, which otherwise would not be easy to do in the CFD directly. It would also be interesting to get the precession of orbits in all regime where the Kepler potential dominates, etc. In this talk, we focused on the anomalous dimension. It would be interesting to get the OPU coefficient perturbatively using some bulk calculation as well. If you could get an all n result, that would be of interest. So one can also, instead of using for 1/r potential or Yukawa potential, one can consider other central potential and do the same calculation we did in this talk to get the anomalous dimension in different regime and in terms of different parameter. Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the very interesting talk. Are there any questions for Zahra? Okay, it seems there are no more questions. So thanks again, Zahra, for giving this talk.
Sure, that's a pleasure.